You're listening to Inner Demons, the comic book podcast based on Marvel's very own spirit of vengeance, Ghost Rider. Here we will discuss comics, news, movie and TV appearances, and everything in between. And now, here are your hosts on this fiery road to hell, Chris Munn and Brian Biggie. Let's ride.
Welcome, everyone, to the next episode of Inner Demons. I am one of your hosts, Chris Munn, and with me, as always, is Brian, sci-fi Viking boat Biggie. What is up, Brian?
What's going on, Chris? How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. So it's been a couple weeks since we've had a new episode out, and there's been some Ghost Rider news that's come out with the February solicitations for 2020, with a new companion series one-shot called Spirits of Ghost Rider, Mother of Demons by Ed Brisson. Roland Boschi is coming on to be the artist on it, and it's going to be a series of one-shots that they're going to be doing to tie in with the ongoing Ghost Rider series. And that is so cool. It's like, how long has it been since we've had not just one, but two Ghost Rider things, you know, going on in a year. What did you think about that news?
Oh, I'm really excited about it. I almost don't want to get my hopes up because it's going to be a cool couple months. As of the time of this recording, we have a Ghost Rider 2099, a one-shot coming out. We have a Cosmic Ghost Rider miniseries helmed by the awesome Dennis Hopeless. So we got a lot of really great stuff coming. So I'm just, you know, cautiously optimistic. I'm looking forward to all of it.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff that's come out in the last couple of months has all been really, really good stuff. Minus Cosmic Ghost Rider Destroys Marvel History.
Oof.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to all this cool stuff that's coming out. Especially, you mentioned Ghost Rider 2099. Oh, I can't wait to read that one. So before we get into any reviews for this episode, how is life on the Twitterverse?
It's been great, man. We've gotten a lot of new followers recently, a lot of people engaging with the show, which is fantastic. We said it before, it's a great time to be a fan of the series. We recently put out a poll. It's still ongoing, so we don't have an answer yet, but I was asking folks how they personally pronounce various names in the universe, in the Ghost Rider universe. Zarathos, Mephisto, versus Zarathos, Mephisto, like all these kind of... I hear it all from various creators and fans, so just for fun, I put that out there. And most recently, as of this taping, last night, I put out a thing asking fans about a potential new Midnight Suns roster of, say, five Marvel characters that you could pick to throw them into a supernatural team of Avengers kind of a thing. And it's been blowing up, so it's been really amazing. We got 1,200 engagements in just 8 hours.
Wow.
185. People hopping into it and answering some ideas they had, which is amazing. The most common answers we've heard is obviously Ghost Rider, but the funny part is everyone has a different idea of which one it should be, which is awesome. I think that's great. I mean, we've heard everything from Robbie Reyes, Danny Ketch, from his Reluctant Hero. We have Johnny Blaze with his Hell experience. ITK Moon Knight, you know, Ray over there said it should be Vengeance, which is awesome because he wants to highlight the lesser known characters. So, but you know, it's been so great. Everyone has great ideas for it. Blade's another big character there.
Oh, I'm sure.
Moon Knight got a lot of responses. We have Sister Sarah Caretaker as kind of almost like a leader or someone guiding the team sort of thing. We have Elsa Bloodstone. Oh, so many really amazing answers. So really, really awesome stuff. You know, I don't want to put you on the spot, but if I was going to ask you what you thought about a potential five-person team.
Let me see here. Danny Ketch, Moon Knight, Satana, Werewolf by Night, Hannibal King.
There you go.
That's just five pulled out of my ass. So what about you?
I have to agree, you know, I, and I, I know we've talked about it in the past, but it's and we've kind of picked out names. You know, I maybe throw in Venom possibly there, maybe a few other characters.
Squirrel Girl.
I agree with that. Of course, right? it sounds so familiar. But what's cool about now is that this is actually a possibility because so many cool things have happened in the last 6 months for the character. So it's just a, like I said, a very exciting time. So not to belabor the point, but
yeah, and
it's such a cool moment.
And I'm, you know, I've not checked it out yet, but there's even a new Morbius series out right now, which I've at least I've not read it yet. Hopefully, it's good, but. It does seem like there's a concentrated effort to bring a lot of these characters back. So it is very, very cool. All right, well, we are going to move on. We've got four comics that we're reviewing this episode, two new ones and two classic ones. I say classic, it's square quotes for one of those. first off, we're going to be looking at the most recent issue of Ghost Rider number 2. Legacy number 238, chapter 2 of The King of Hell, written by Ed Brisson, with artwork by Aaron Cuter, with assistance from Craig Young, John Lucas, and Luciano Vecchio. So, the issue starts off with Johnny Blaze walking around barefoot in New York City, and he's seeing all the sin coming off of everyone around him on the city street. Until he sees the one person that's not carrying any sin, and he recognizes him as a demon in human form. Johnny transforms into the Ghost Rider, chases the guy into an alley, and essentially reveals him to be a demon and then tortures him for the location of all the other demons who escaped from hell in the previous issue. The next morning, at the Fadeaway pub, Stacy Dolan knocks on the door and wakes up Danny Ketch, who's been sleeping in the bar, and she says that a patron of the bar named Henry Hartley was found dead in his apartment, and witnesses saw a leather-clad skeleton man with a flaming head walk into the building moments before the fire. Danny says it wasn't him. He was at his mom's grave, and he was drunk. And that, no, the Ghost Rider wouldn't do that. Danny wouldn't do that. Stacy's called away. And meanwhile, in hell, the demon that Johnny tortured to get the location of the other demons, he's back in hell, and he's rescued by Lilith and her Lilin, who tells the demon that he did a good thing telling Johnny where the other demons on Earth were. Which is on the Manhattan Cruise Terminal, this cruise ship, where everyone on the cruise ship is a demon that has taken over a human body. And as Johnny says, they possess the bodies of innocent people, devoured their souls, wore their skins as though they were your own, so that you could walk Earth undetected. And as he's taken out this cruise ship, the police are surrounding it. Stacy calls Danny to make sure it's not him. Danny realizes that it's Johnny, and he transforms into the Ghost Rider and goes to confront his brother. Johnny is sending all the demons back to hell using a new trick called the Damnation Stare that judges whether or not the demons deserve to be forgiven or sent back to hell. And, of course, he's sending them all to hell when Danny interrupts, because all Danny sees is a bunch of regular people being tortured by Johnny, who has this new demonic crown appearance to his skull. Johnny and Danny fight while one of the demons possesses the leader of the SWAT team outside. And when the police officer that's possessed goes to fire on Johnny, Johnny grabs him with his chains and burns him alive, which of course the police just see as him burning alive a cop. Johnny gets on his bike, rides away, and Danny chases after them. And the chase extends all the way onto, I guess, what looks like the Brooklyn Bridge. Johnny stops. He takes out Danny's motorcycle, holds Danny over the edge of the bridge, and strips him of the spirit of vengeance. Then drops Danny off the bridge into the water, seemingly to his death. And that is where this issue ends. So, Brian, what did you think about Ghost Rider number 2?
This one just continues along with the last one. I had a lot of fun with it. You know, right off the top, I'm loving the art and symbolism of Johnny Blaze in New York and walking past all the residents and just smelling the sin on them and just visually seeing what they've done and how it is affecting him in his new role as King of Hell. You know, if you thought it was bad before with him just being the host for the Spirit of Vengeance, it's like it's ramped up even further. The art has been really great, and I know there was a few things with the art this month where they've had joining Aaron Cooter was I think Craig Young, John Lucas, Luciano Vecchio, a few other guys tagged in to help him out with the issue, and I thought all around, despite having that many people in the mix, it was fantastic. I love the monster's expression in the alley, and I like even the moment of when you see Blaze, you see his skull, it looks different than how it does in the Avengers arc that's concurrent right now. It looks, and his whole appearance looks very much darker, much more corrupted. His skull, in fact, kind of reminds me of a Japanese Oni mask. You ever see those things? It's like his head is almost becoming one of those kind of, it's like changing physically, which is really, really kind of a cool visual. Stacey Dolan, we've had some fans ask us, you know, who is Stacey? I'm not really up on the Ghost Rider mythology. I didn't read in the 90s kind of thing. And she was front and center for almost the entirety of it way back in the 90s. She'd go away once in a while, but she'd come back. And the fact that she's here now is really cool. She's it's a different kind of character. She seems a little more reserved. She's more mature. You know, obviously she's still in her police role, but I like that she still cares for Danny. She brings him a coffee in the morning, you know, checking in on him kind of thing. And that was a cool little moment that I missed the first time where she's getting him a little, like some breakfast or something, a little coffee, which is kind of cool. I'm hoping that there's something there with those two characters moving forward, considering how big she was in the 90s. And there's even some unfinished business that they've had in the 90s. I think there was a potential pregnancy storyline and a few other things they were working on.
Oh, yeah. The very end of the 90s series, yeah.
Yeah, and there was even something I was wondering if they were going to kind of put something in there for a Danny's a potential child for Danny, because it seemed like she has at least one kid. That Danny was kind of like, well, she's moved on, she has a kid now. Well, I mean, maybe there was a couple of years where they lost touch or something, where maybe they'll do something just like they're doing with Eddie Brock right now in the Venom series. They have him with Dylan, with his son. It's like out of nowhere they're bringing in a newer character, but it does kind of open up some potential possibilities if it's done right. Oftentimes it's not done right, but we'll see how it goes. I do love the fact that Danny is in an existential crisis right now. Just when he thinks he's out, they pull him back in, sort of thing.
Danny is consistently in an existential crisis.
Yeah.
he's been in an existential crisis since 1990. So, but I know. Sorry to interrupt.
No, absolutely. I think the last time that he wasn't was when he turned heel and he had blue flames and he was just pounding on a Blaze there, you know? So, about 10 years back when he was kind of a bad guy a little bit, you know, he was just, fully self-righteous in that mode. But it, you know, I like the fact that while Danny recoils from the powers, Johnny Blaze right now revels in it. And I like that dynamic. Some fans may not be happy with what they're doing to Blaze, but I'm having faith in the team right now, in the creative team, that there is a plan. So I want to see how this plays out. Like I said, some of the art, there's a zoom, you know, and anytime there's a skull on there, it's so great. There's a visual of a possessed little girl that's really creepy, you know, really well done. And the damnation stare, I thought that was kind of an interesting paradox on the penance stare. I thought that was kind of cool. I'm still loving the motorcycle details, you know, with the underside. You see it's almost like it's organic in some way, shape, or form, which is really cool. You see like a skeletal structure where the engine would be. It's such a cool moment. And the ending has a lot of possibilities. Seeing what happens, you know, like part of me doubts that Johnny would ever do that to Danny, no matter what, considering their history and their relationship. But there's a lot of possibilities there. Couple things I didn't like too much were, I'm still not fully sold on Lilith's redesign at the moment.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I'll give it a chance, but her appearance right now kind of makes her feel like an original character, like not something that's a legacy character in the series that's been so important to the overall structure of the 90s, you know, Midnight Suns and Siege of Darkness and all those kind of storylines. But I'm definitely going to give it a chance, you know. But part of me was saying, well, at this point, maybe they could have just made it someone new, but... we'll definitely see what happens with that. And the other, one of the things I didn't like was going back to Stacy, even though I liked her character here, how they depicted her was interesting because she was basically just standing around most of the time, despite a lot of crazy things happening by the end with the, you know, blaze going in and tearing people apart. And she's just usually just standing in the background, like completely static, which is, I thought that was interesting, you know. Mm-hmm. Overall, I thought it was a very good issue. And also, what was cool was in the back, we have the letters to the editor. We have one of our longtime listeners, Michael Philbrick, was featured in the Ghostwriters section, which is I thought was amazing. So that's
That's awesome.
At SOV Collector, he's a big fan of the show. He's got probably one of the biggest collections of Ghostwriter in that I've ever seen in my life, and it's a. I just want to give him a shout out. Thank you for listening. And that's awesome that you're featured. Now you're part of the story, man. It's now you're part of the Ghost Rider history, which is amazing. So, but yeah, overall, I really enjoyed the issue. What did you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think I have to, just agree with pretty much everything you said on it. You know, you, back a couple of days ago on Twitter, you did the 2009-2019 challenge, photo challenge. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting that 10 years ago was the Jason Aaron run where these two characters, Johnny Blaze and Danny Ketch, their positions were completely flipped. And it was Danny trying to take away Johnny's power because he was consumed by his, you know, his lust for more Ghost Rider power and all that. I just thought that was really, really interesting, and I'm sure it was a big coincidence, but hey, that's cool. The artwork in this issue, Aaron Cuter and his guys that came in to help him out, I thought all did a really good job. And normally, like, I remember when Jason Aaron's Avengers started, you know, we commented on how Ed McGuinness couldn't make it through two issues without having to have someone come in to help him out. And there was really no explanation for it, which, I mean, that happens. That's fine. But, you know, Cuter has a message in the back, in the letters page, that, you know, mm-hmm. gives an explanation for why he wasn't able to do that. And, he's having health issues. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wish that everything works out well for Cuter because his artwork is amazing. And... Mm-hmm. Hopefully he can be back on the book full time again, but at least, you know, knowing that there's a good reason why he's not drawing this issue, I think was a nice thing to see in the back. And, you know, that was a classy thing for him to do, to come in and say, hey, this is why I haven't been here on the second issue. But the work that he did, like his work just seems so visceral in places, like the little girl demon and, Johnny giving the damnation stare where he's like splitting the demon's head open. It's so cool. Johnny's redesign, you know, his skull. I mean, maybe it's an obvious thing, it's just me, but I didn't realize at first until my second read through that his skull has mutated to be a crown, which I thought was a very nice touch. And you got the bit at the where he's confronting the guy in the alley, and you can see the reflection of his skull in the eyeball, in the demon's eyeball, which I thought was really, really good. I do have to agree that the only part I'm not quite sold on is Lilith's redesign, because it makes her look kind of pedestrian, where before she had that really wild and out there, you know, like headpiece and everything. But hey, I mean, it's still it's an interesting take on the character, and story-wise, you know, they're really, this and Avengers has really been setting up Johnny as a villain, but based on what he does in this issue, you know, he seems, I don't see where there's a lot, there's much villainous about it, because, you know, he's taking these demons back to hell, and he's saying, you know, you destroyed the lives of the people that you've possessed. You know, you may not want to go back to hell, but the way you did it was to damn more innocent people. But when Danny gets on the boat, he just sees Johnny attacking innocent people. He doesn't see the demons.
Right.
So I'm wondering if a lot of this is being manipulated by Mephisto. Because, of course, he's going to be on the cover to issue number 3. So I think there's more to this than what's at face value. I don't think Johnny is really turning heel like they're trying to push so hard in this and Avengers. I think a lot of this is perception. People are being like almost tricked into thinking this about Johnny. But I'm really curious to see
both brothers think that the other is wrong, and that they're doing the right thing. And so one of our fans put that out there, and the way they wrote it, it was like they hit the nail on the head. It was so accurate, where it's like they're both doing what they feel that needs to be done, and that the other brother has failed in some capacity, and they're trying to rectify that from their viewpoint. And it's just so cool that both characters see it possibly the same way, and then where it leaves the end is such an open-ended thing. We had some listeners say, if Danny catches dead, I'm going to be pissed, because I'm all in now. But I don't think that's the case. But I just thought that was pretty interesting, you know?
Though I do think it's funny now that you mentioned about, I mean, I don't really think Danny's dead at the end of it, even though they say in the letters page that they've killed off the main character. But now that I think about it, Danny's not on the covers for issues 3, 4, and 5. Mm-hmm. So, we'll see.
Unless, I mean, now who's the character that's in hell? It looks like he's strung up. He has some chains around his arms and feet. There's a visual that's out there in one of the upcoming issues.
Issue 4.
And this will be issue 4. And I took that as potentially him. Maybe if he's dead, maybe he's down there in hell getting tortured or something like that. If that's the direction they're going, this is going to be a moot point in a couple months when the issue's out, obviously. But, that's what I was wondering. I wonder if he's down there and then he's going to come back with more abilities. Because it seems like, I mean, there's a tease for an upcoming Hearts of Darkness
Hearts of Darkness 2.
And I think, and not to be confused with The Dark Design, you know, which is its own sequel to it. It seems like Danny's back, but with another set of abilities for the time being. I mean, we all want to see him in the seat of the bike, you know what I mean, as the Ghost Rider. But, I mean, it's definitely kind of interesting to see what could happen with that. But, yeah.
All right, we're going to move on. Next up, we've got Avengers number 25, which is chapter 4 of Challenge of the Ghost Riders, titled Spirit of a Vengeance, written by Jason Aaron with artwork by Stefano Caselli. And it opens up in hell, where Robbie Reyes is fighting his evil uncle Eli, who has possessed the body of a celestial, and confronted him with the dead souls of his parents, Robbie's parents, that is. Robbie fights back against Eli, and is saved at the last minute by the Avengers, who arrive in hell alongside Frank Castle, Cosmic Ghost Rider. And they're flying on an Asgardian Viking ship, powered by Wakandan technology, and piloted by Captain Marvel. Johnny Blaze, who's riding through hell on his way to the throne, ready to win the race, is confronted by Blade and Thor. And there's this really sweet bit where Johnny uses his destroyed motorcycle to create his own hammer. He says, I was born a gearhead and a carny. Built my first bike from junkyard scrap when I was 9. You think I don't know how to swing a hammer? And as the Avengers fight him, the Viking Avengers ship flies forward and it gets a gamma surge, a turbocharge from She-Hulk, who pours her gamma energy into the thrusters. Cosmic Ghost Rider arrives carrying the severed celestial head, having killed Eli. But before he can kill Blaze, a bunch of demons attack and pull Blaze away and overwhelm Frank. Johnny reforms his motorcycle and starts racing toward the throne. But Robbie uses his own Ghost Rider power to transform the Avengers ship into a flying Ghost Rider Viking ship. And right at the last second, beats Blaze to the throne of hell. And he jumps down and punches Blaze in the face. And he says, I just won your stupid hell race by showing you that a Ghost Rider doesn't have to ride alone, that maybe it's best when we don't. Because amid all the hellfire and penance and racing to beat the devil, it's family that keeps us sane, even in the darkest depths of hell. And you, Blaze, you seem like you could sure use a family right now. But Robbie's not going to keep the throne. He abdicates it, while also not giving Blaze the power he needs to control hell and having humiliated him in front of all of the demons there. But Blaze remarks that Robbie's now free of Eli's curse. But when Castle arrives to kill Blaze, Johnny just sinks into the ground and they can't find him anywhere in hell. Thor retrieves Robbie's car while Robbie says goodbye to his parents, who are accompanied into hell by the assembled Ghost Riders of the past. And then back on Earth, Robbie is in the desert with his brother Gabe, and he takes him for a ride in the car, saying that, you know, I think I'm actually going to fit in my new job. Cosmic Ghost Rider leaves for space, commenting that the whole stinking Earth smells way too much like Mephisto, which cues Iron Man walking through a cave that was discovered in Turkey where excavators found a fossilized Iron Man helmet from a million years ago. Suddenly, the helmet comes to life and says, Rage Mephisto, and it activates a magic spell that transports Tony Stark 1 million years in the past, where he is still in the cave, 6 months after arriving there. He's cannibalized all of his armor. He has no technology left. And he says, I'm Tony Stark, the smartest caveman in the world. Smartest man in all of 1 million BCE. But how do you fight the devil with rocks and ice? And that is where this issue and this story arc ends. So, Brian, what'd you think of Avengers number 25?
I thought it was interesting right off the start. We have... Robbie Reyes gives an insight into how sad and lonely that the lives of the Ghost Riders are. We've all known that, but he's so new to the role that he has a different perspective than the other guys. And you know, it's like they either go crazy or they die and they lose everybody they love. And he's determined to keep family as the center of his life, whether it's Gabe or the other team members, which is a really great dynamic. I'm impressed that Aaron's written so much about the Ghost Rider in his Avengers run over the last year. He's definitely has his critics, but I appreciate that the effort is there. Despite how some of the elements are being played with, some listeners don't like what they've done with Eli and how potentially Uncle Eli is not even a factor in Robbie's life at the moment, where if you go back to 2014 and on, that was like the possessing spirit. Like that was the spirit that was kind of was in the mix, was his mm-hmm. Zarathos, you know, it was right there. But I gotta say that while some fans love that, other fans hate that. So it is a little bit of a divisive situation when you have a character that's not just tied to like a supernatural entity like Noble Kale or Zarathos, but you have someone who's tied to a serial killer and he's doing good. So it's like, that is a troublesome point. I got to say that because, like I said, we got a lot of diehard Robbie Reyes listeners and some people really pissed with what they're doing with Eli. But I'm wondering if this is kind of like a table clearing on Aaron's part to bring him much more closer to the traditional Spirit of Vengeance. And that even that's going to piss off people because some people don't want that. Robbie Reyes has never has been. He's always been a little different, you know, with his origin and his upbringing. So we'll obviously see how that plays out, but it's right down the middle. Like I can't say it's all bad because some fans are like, thank God Uncle Eli's out of the equation because that was just a troublesome backstory to have this hero tied to a mortal serial killer, you know, yes, with satanic ties, but really kind of thing. It's like, okay, you know, he's got superpowers. Great. So that is interesting to see how that plays out. But my vision of what Aaron may be trying to do at this point, in the time that he has with Ghost Riders, he's trying to lift up the mythology of Robbie even further. And that's just going to ruffle feathers because some people don't want that. Yeah. Some people will like how it was with Felipe Smith's run. But hey, it is what it is, man. some of the art is great in this one. We have the chains coming from Robbie's torso, cutting off the large arm of the Celestial. That was really great. I totally missed that the first time around, and he's using his chains to swing the giant fist toward the Celestial's face, which was just awesome. I thought that was really great. Of course, you have the Asgardian race boat, powered with Stark tech and Wakanda tech and everything. That was kind of a cool visual. And I do like the team dynamic. This family thing where they all got his back at this point. It was just like, it's such a cool moment. You have the main roster being like, we got this, guys. It's just so cool that they're doing this for Robbie Reyes. I think it really cements him as a big player in the Marvel Universe. I could be wrong here, but having him involved, like I said, a lot of listeners say he should never have been on an Avenger. It is not his wheelhouse, but having him there and having such an important role over the last year with them just makes him a bigger player. So I can't imagine that less people know about Robbie now than before. Because you him on the number one book, or the one of the number one selling books in the company. So, I don't know. You got to take the good with the bad. You know, is he exactly the same as he was in 2014? No, but there was even some missteps back then, too. So, I don't want people saying it was all puppies and rainbows. It's like that there was problems right at the beginning. As much as I love that series, and as much as I love Robbie Reyes, there were issues. There's a reason why those series couldn't really get a full foothold for a year or more, you know what I mean? And hey, the same can be said for a lot of Danny Ketch, Johnny Blaze stories too. Same thing, but there was something missing there. So this is the longest continuous story that Robbie's been part of. You know, this is 25, 26 issues so far, and he's still involved. Yes, sometimes he's just in the background, but there's been over a year where he's been a big part of this, you know, Chris?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but anyway, back to the, you know, I'll try to wrap up quick. You know, Johnny Blaze is on a real power trip here. You know, he's kind of justifying it in his own head. But I did think that was interesting with how that's playing out. I'm not fully sold on this whole race thing. It just seems like kind of an excuse to kind of get them all together. But, I mean, it is what it is kind of thing, you know. It's like... But despite me saying that, I do like the fact that it's almost like over the years, sometimes you've had to have the Ghost Riders have to race each other. It's like it's in their blood, you know. It's like what they need to do. But so that's definitely interesting. I do love the artwork. Like I said, anytime they have Blaze or Cosmic Ghost Rider, it just looks so amazing. So I mean, kudos to the art team here. Really, really great. And you gotta love Blaze's huge hammer too, that he just like constructs out of bike parts, and he's swinging it at Thor. That was just badass. There's a great moment with Captain America and Black Panther, where, you know, they're fighting together, and Black Panther says, you know, please never change, Cap, you know, because he's... and that was such just a great moment about his history in World War II. And at the end, Robbie forgives Blaze, which is really, really great. He's like the bigger man. Yes, he wins the race, but he's the bigger man. And he talks about family just being that central focus of his life, which is really great. Overall, I thought this whole series, this arc had a killer start, right? But a lot of fans did not like it, and I can see some of their criticisms, because I feel like the end was a little hollow for me. Because after all this war building and everything, into the way it ends is a little off-putting for me. I don't really get the timeline compared to the ongoing series, because Blaze obviously looks different, he's acting different, and I'm just trying to wonder if this took place before Ghost Rider 1, for example, because he looks totally different.
I would think it would have to,
feel like he's a little more traditional in this one, and by Ghost Rider 1 and 2, he's even more down that path. But it is a little frustrating for timeline-wise. I thought Blaze's insult to Frank Castle was interesting about his family.
Oh, yeah.
But he has to watch out what he says, because he lost Craig and Emma as it is. So, you know, pot meet kettle, you know? I mean, I was trying to figure out Blaze's motivation against Mephisto in this one. I think at this point, Mephisto's still in jail,
Vegas.
Right?
In Vegas? He's in Vegas, yeah.
So, I mean, that seemed a little off. It seemed like, yes, you know, Mephisto killed him, but that was part of the plan. So, it kind of like, that went according to their mission way back in Damnation. But, I don't know, it seemed a little weak. He's like, Mephisto, I'm going to get you. And I'm like, huh? So, that was a little, like, weird. Like, that's part of the bargain, is that he's stuck there to save the world. You know what I mean? But so that was a little strange for me. And then at the end, I was trying to figure out, So Blaze lost the race. If he lost some of his kingly power, I didn't get it. It's like,
so yeah, that was what I was just wondering too. Like, I'm looking at this page right now where Robbie wins the race, and you know, Johnny's like, that's the finish line. First one to the Hell Throne wins the challenge. I did it. I'll be the most powerful Ghost Rider who's ever lived. But then Robbie wins the race. And Robbie's not the most powerful Ghost Rider who ever lived because he won the race. So what was the prize? You know, other than the Throne of Hell, Robbie doesn't take it. He gives it back to Johnny. Well, Johnny already had it. I don't understand it. Yeah, it didn't make any sense at all.
The end doesn't add up. Yeah, and that was the last thing I was going to say. I mean, besides Robbie's parents, that not making a lick of sense either. You know, why they're dead or why Robbie doesn't know they're dead, why they're in hell. I mean, it was a cool moment seeing them together, and then at the end seeing Robbie and Gabe drive around. That was great, but it almost opens up more questions than answers, you know? So, and then the whole Tony Stark coda at the end with the teasing. Like, I'm not even fully sure everything that's going on there, but it is what it is. What did you think?
Oh, so overall, I really like Challenge of the Ghost Riders. I like Aaron's take on the mythos. I like that Robbie and Johnny got such a big spotlight. And I like the inclusion of Cosmic Ghost Rider in it. I think all the pieces of this story arc were really, really good. But I don't think the end was satisfying.
Yeah, I agree.
Because Cosmic Ghost Rider at the end didn't, you know, for all the fanfare he had of being part of this, you know, he's right there on the cover racing alongside Johnny and Johnny and Robbie. He didn't really add up to much. I mean, yeah, he took out Eli off panel, but other than that, he's just sort of there for a few panels. And I don't know, it's like there was no resolution to this. I know there really couldn't be any status quo change for Johnny Blaze because it was going into the ongoing series. Which I think timeline wise, I think Johnny made so many random appearances this past year that I think you've got like Symbiote of Vengeance, then this Avengers story, then Ghost Rider 1, I think is how it all lays out. Which I think I mentioned when we reviewed Ghost Rider number 1, I don't understand why they didn't launch Ghost Rider out of the end of this story arc instead of having issue number 1 come out before this story ended. It's like it really messed up the momentum of it. I mean, you could have gone straight out of the end of this into Ghost Rider number 1, and it would have been a pretty natural segue. But instead, there's some really muddy waters there.
Unless they were trying to push for an October release for issue 1, which is the only thing I could think of for a Halloween-esque release to really kind of get more people in the mood kind of thing.
Yeah, that's
possible. I'm just wondering if there's probably a lot of Avengers fans who cannot stand Ghost Rider.
I'm sure
who
there
probably
are.
Really dislike this story arc, and even the last one too. Like, all right, enough already. Like, you know, thank God they're moving to other stuff at this point.
Yeah.
Maybe I can only imagine what some fans are thinking. I mean, we enjoyed a lot of it, but I mean, it's a little heavy-handed for someone who doesn't give a crap about Ghost Rider.
Exactly.
I mean, imagine if they did this with a character that we didn't like. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
and you know, so okay, like in the Ghost Rider series, they're really trying to play up this idea of Johnny Blaze as a villain. But again, his motivations aren't completely villainous. Yeah, he's doing some bad stuff, like threatening Robbie's brother, and you can tell that being the leader of hell is getting to him, where he's like telling the demons to bow down before their king and all that. But the Avengers are just, they're attacking him like he's Doctor Doom or something, you know, that's, I don't know, like even Blade was there in Damnation. He knows why Johnny Blaze is down there. And
he just doesn't care.
Blade's a prick. You know, there's. But I did like the confrontation between Thor and Johnny, where they have their matching hammers. And it's like, you think I don't know how to swing a hammer? Your fancy Viking heaven ain't got nothing on the kingdom of the damn. I thought it was really cool.
Well, I, I did like the Black Panther was trying to say, come back with us, we can help you kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or let's figure this out together. Like that was cool that it wasn't completely like a lost cause, that he's just a total villain. But then he just kind of like, he just kind of disappears at the end. I was like, huh? Like he was just kind of like morphs into the ground, just taking, I was like, ugh. Like, I don't know. The end really just didn't work
for me. Yeah, it didn't for me either. It was very anticlimactic.
Agreed. Yeah.
And I didn't much like the big Viking ship that Robbie uses to win with. I thought it was kind of silly. But I could also see where it was like all the pieces of like the Avengers paraphernalia coming together to give him the edge that he needed. I get the symbolism behind it.
It was like Voltron, Voltron or Power Rangers or something. Yeah,
I get the symbolism, but I thought it was kind of goofy. All in all, I liked this arc, but I thought the ending was the weakest part of it. I am interested in seeing where Robbie goes from here. I'm one of those readers that likes the idea of Robbie being brought in closer to like the spirit of vengeance, Ghost Rider mythos outside of the Uncle Eli thing. Mm-hmm. I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
So I can understand, though I do understand why some fans are not. But all in all, I don't know. I just wish this had a stronger ending. It's not bad. Yeah. It is a good comic. This has been a good arc, but it didn't. It just didn't live up to the promise of those first couple of chapters of it.
Absolutely.
I will say, though, the artwork by Stefano Caselli was really, really good. I liked Robbie using his chains to sever Eli's hand, and anytime the Ghost Riders were on panel, they all looked fantastic. I think
it's... I mean, it's one of those things where if you went back and told us a couple years ago, there's going to be a Ghost Rider on the team of the Avengers, and it's going to be like a 4-issue focus on the whole history of the characters, like we wouldn't have believed you because it's just not what we were expecting. So on that hand, it's really good. But I think it's almost like if you go back and reread the early issues in this arc, this one doesn't. I agree 100%. This one doesn't hold up to the early issues, and I forgot how much I enjoyed those first couple, 22, 23, whatever it was. I'm like, wow, this is really cool. Like, I was really looking forward to that ending, but then how else could it have ended?
Yeah.
You know? So it's kind of like,
So, all right. Well, we are going to move on to our classic reviews. The Champions, issue number 2. Whom the Gods Would Join from January 1976. And it's written by Tony Isabella with artwork by Don Heck and John Tartag. It picks up with Ghost Rider, Hercules, Angel, Iceman, Black Widow, and Venus being confronted on the UCLA campus by 3 other Greek gods. Pluto, the god of Hades, Ares, the god of war, and Hippolyta, the queen of the Amazons. And Pluto says that, okay, Hercules, you're going to marry Ares and Hercules and Ares. Pluto says that Venus is going to marry Ares and Hercules is going to marry Hippolyta. And that if they refuse, then the universe is going to die. And this has all been decreed by Zeus. Hercules, of course, jumps into the battle and, he's bested by Pluto pretty easily. And the champions are just sort of standing around watching until they come up with a plan, and they go through the portal. Angel and Ghost Rider get blasted by Pluto, but that gives time for Venus and Black Widow to drag Hercules back through the portal from Olympus, which Iceman then blocks up with a big ice block, which has blocked the portal from the other side. And Ares and Pluto and Hippolyta can't get through. They go to Zeus's throne room in Olympus. And Pluto reminds him that, I realize that other rulers of the dead might think that we are unjustly persecuted. So we all formed an alliance. Though Satan and Mephisto both refused. But people like Nightmare and probably some others like Satanish, Dormammu, who doesn't show him. But anyway, they agreed to. And if they have an alliance now, and they're going to destroy Olympus unless Zeus allows these marriages to go along as Pluto has planned, as a sign of teaming up Hades and Olympus. So, but Zeus reluctantly agrees, and but then Pluto's like, "Ha ha! Hath he forgotten the sacred laws of this land? Laws he himself did inscribe for all to obey. And these laws are that no wife may oppose their husband, and no husband may oppose their wife. With the marriages, they are binding Hercules and Venus, who are the only two Olympians that could prevent the overthrow of Zeus. And this will allow Pluto to take over Olympus." Which doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but okay. Because wouldn't that tie Ares and Hippolyta down too? It doesn't make a lot of sense. On UCLA, Ghost Rider reports back to the champions that all the monsters they fought in issue one have disappeared. And then this really geeky looking guy on a flaming surfboard thing called the Huntsman arrives. And he throws down this fire spear that paralyzes Hercules and Venus. But Ghost Rider blasts him back with hellfire and just knocks him into a tree. The Angel, Iceman, Black Widow, and Ghost Rider all go in search of the Huntsman, who with his wooden staff materializes Menetius, I guess that's how you pronounce it, who was a Titan that Zeus killed and transformed into living energy that now the Huntsman is using. But then Iceman just makes the big giant energy monster slip on an ice puddle. And Black Widow electrocutes him. And oh god, so it says, and then the Huntsman gets zapped because it says, "For the Huntsman's staff, which summoned that late Titan to Earth, is made of wood native to Olympus. Wood that is, against all mortal logic, conductive." This comic's so stupid. Anyway, Ghost Rider was left behind to protect the unconscious Venus and Hercules. But the Huntsman uses his powers, and he makes Pluto, Ares, and Hippolyta appear in front of Ghost Rider. And Ghost Rider blasts them all with hellfire. But then the spell fades, and he realizes he just blasted Angel, Iceman, and Black Widow. The Huntsman knocks Ghost Rider out from behind, and the Huntsman leaves with the unconscious Hercules and Venus. The champions wake up, and they're all really pissed at Johnny Blaze, who's now Johnny Blaze again because, you know, there's no more danger. And they are all really, really down on Johnny for this. And Johnny's like, you know, "How are we going to rescue him? Tell me how four mortals track somebody to Olympus." And they're all depressed, and they all split off and go their separate ways. And that is where this issue ends. All right, Brian, champions number two. What you got for me?
It's an issue, that's for sure.
it is certainly a comic, yeah.
It all depends on what you like. If you are real big into a lot of the Olympian stuff and the gods and Hercules, it's probably pretty fun because it's in your wheelhouse. And coming in as a fan of Ghost Rider, I just think it's not, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. It's fine. It's, you know, this is in the 70s. I didn't expect it to be an amazing representation of Johnny Blaze, but at least Blaze got a chance to introduce himself in this one, you know, a little bit. He gets that was not bad, but it's this overall, the issue is not great. I didn't enjoy myself for this one. And maybe I'm being too hard on it because, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, some people are fans of the premise here, but yeah, obviously the champions wasn't really a fully functional team for a lot of their series. You know, obviously Blaze is not, like, he goes away and he comes back and they rag on him the whole time. So, I mean, it's a weird situation. I appreciate that Isabella's putting him in here. get a little more eyeballs on the product. Maybe that could have helped the character to survive any lulls in sales. Who knows? But I just overall, it's just not a great issue. I did like the fact that Blaze got a chance to help out by taking out the Huntsman, apparently, or whatever. At least he's kind of contributing. I didn't mind the last panel where they're all walking away from each other, you know, where it's a little bit of dramatic tension. But I think that's too soon for this issue to cliffhanger. Like, they just got together, they're already breaking up kind of thing. And maybe that was by design, but I thought it was really dumb. I'm personally already bored with the marriage storyline, but with the characters, I'm not a fan of it. I think it's really lame. It's a tiresome Olympian treachery. It's not as engaging for someone who doesn't care about Hercules and company. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that was, I mean, like I said, it is what it is. It's Champions number two. I did think it was funny. It was so nice that Bobby Drake clarified Angel's previous comment about Cyclops by saying it out loud in the very next panel. I'm like, geez, really? It's like the aforementioned Cyclops. Let's go. I'm like, oh my goodness gracious. I mean, we're taking for granted there's been like 40 years of comics in media with the X-Men, so maybe we're much more used to it. But maybe back then they didn't know as much. Who knows? In hindsight, it's really stupid. but it is what it is. But the comic goes from absurd to ridiculous very quickly with the full page of... I keep on saying Mennonitis. He's like the giant being.
Meningitis.
Yeah, I think this issue gave us meningitis. You know, it's just... It's action for action's sake. It just is lame. And for me, it didn't work. So I couldn't wait for the story to end. But there might be some diehard fans of this. So might be looking too hard on it with kind of more modern eyes. But what did you think?
Yeah, this comic is a real slog to get through. There's so much about this that just... God, it's just not good. The whole Olympian storyline. I just don't care about the Olympian gods at all. And their plot, like Pluto's plot to overthrow Zeus, actually brings up something on the Vengeance Unbound Facebook page. One of our fans on there, one of our listeners, Mirko Ruau. I'm sorry, I'm going to butcher your last name. Ruaro. Ruaro. I apologize. I know that sound was probably not right at all. Anyway, he wrote in and says, "Hey guys, I just finished the podcast with the Champions number one. Brian said that Katie Milner's brother doesn't exist because she is actually Roxanne Simpson, who is possessed by a demon from Mephisto's control. Now, that's the whole premise for Johnny Blaze being at UCLA to be a part of this, is that Katie sent him to deliver something to her brother who doesn't exist." He continues to go on and says, "I think that Mephisto had set up Johnny to derail Pluto's plan to kill Zeus. Pluto made a deal with the other Hell Lords, and it was Ghost Rider who walks past Pluto and tells Zeus about Pluto's plan to kill him." That happens in issue number three. "What do you guys think of this theory? Has any legs?" And that's actually, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Much more. It makes too much sense.
More so. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's giving this storyline more credit than it deserves. But hey, I think that's extremely plausible. The whole thing is Pluto makes a deal with a bunch of other Hell Lords, except for Satan and Mephisto, who both refuse, that they are going to join together to attack Olympus unless Zeus has Hercules and Venus marry Ares and Hippolyta, because due to Zeus's law, if there's a war in Olympus, wife may not oppose husband, and husband not oppose wife, and with those marriages, Hercules and Venus will be bound to not be able to help Zeus. But does that not also mean that Pluto's two strongest allies, Ares and Hippolyta, would also not be able to help Pluto because they could not stand against their husband and wife, Hercules and Venus?
I mean, the more you mention the phrase Pluto, the more I'm just thinking the Disney character. So it's just getting more and more confusing.
It doesn't. Anyway, this plot makes no sense at all. And then you've got the character find of 1975, the Huntsman, with his bowl cut and his purple jammies, and it's just he has a staff that's made of wood that apparently conducts electricity, and it shocks him into unconsciousness. For the Huntsman's staff, which summoned that late Titan to Earth, is made of wood native to Olympus. Wood that is, against all mortal logic, conductive. It's so stupid. And then you get the part where, so they leave Johnny Blaze behind at the end to protect Hercules and Venus, who are out cold. And Ghost Rider is given a vision of Pluto, Hippolyta, and Ares running at him through a portal. And Blaze blasts them with hellfire. And then the Huntsman comes up, knocks Johnny out, and it shows that it was an illusion and everything. And so Johnny was tricked. He thought he was doing the right thing. And boy, they just rag on him. They really just tear him down. Like, you know, I think he did the reasonable thing. He thought, you know, it's not like he made a big mistake. He was tricked. But anyway, yeah, they all go their separate ways at the end. And, you know, that's where this series should have just ended. No, it's not fair, because this comic series does have good issues later on down the road. But
yeah, definitely. It kind of feels like we're watching an Olympian reality show about weddings and stuff like that. I'm like, what are we doing here? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's Olympian Bachelor Island. Yeah, it's
my big fat Olympian wedding. You know, so
there you go. All right. And the artwork. I'm not a fan of Don Heck at all. His artwork. There's problems with, like, okay, all the portals that they're going in and out of. What part is Olympus? What part is California? I'm not feeling this comic at all. It's not good. It's not good at all.
No.
All right. With that, I think we're going to move on. Next, we got Ghost Rider number 19 from 1991. This is written by Howard Mackey with artwork by Mark Texera. And it opens up in Lower East Side of Manhattan, where a depressed divorcee named Chris Daniels prepares to shoot himself in his empty apartment. He fails and says he just wants the strength to kill himself. He wants to die. And that's when Mephisto appears to make a deal. Meanwhile, on the Brooklyn Bridge, Ghost Rider is interrogating a drug dealer named Tim on information about Zodiac. And says, you know, their fate's worse than death if you don't tell me what's going on. Back with Chris Daniels and Mephisto, he gives him a deal in exchange for his soul that he'll give him the courage to take his own life. And it recreates Daniels as in a almost like a superhuman form, and says, you're immortal. You have the courage to kill yourself, but the only thing that can kill you is Ghost Rider. The next day, Dan Ketch spends time with his mom and with Stacy, but he blows Stacy off because he needs to go hunting for Zodiac. Zodiac is interrogating Tim and you know, cuts his nose open and wants everything about Ghost Rider. Chris Daniels walks across the hall from his empty apartment to his neighbor, and he's butt naked, and he asks her for some clothes, and then gets a serious migraine and says, I need you to take me to Brooklyn. In Brooklyn, Danny's riding around on his bike with a police scanner, and he hears the cops talking about Zodiac possibly still being on the scene of a murder. He transforms into Ghost Rider, and Daniel's neighbor, Akeen, is taking him across the bridge into Brooklyn on the back of her motorcycle. He's wearing like this fishnet fetish gear thing with sunglasses, and it looks ridiculous. He tries to kill himself by jumping in front of a bus, and it doesn't work. At the murder site, Ghost Rider confronts Zodiac, but he's stopped by Chris Daniels, who demands that Ghost Rider kill him. Ghost Rider refuses, and he keeps trying to get him to do it, but Ghost Rider just beats him up and says, you know, don't stand in my way anymore. The guy's name's Suicide is what they end up calling him. Daniels gets pushed by Ghost Rider and he falls off the building onto the street below, and, you know, thinking that maybe that's what's going to kill him. Ghost Rider finds Zodiac, grabs him, he's going to give him the penance stare, but he takes his mask off and finds that it's a very disfigured Tim, the drug dealer, who was forced to cosplay as Zodiac by Zodiac. Daniel's Suicide comes back, and Ghost Rider forces him to see Tim's dying body and says, see this. Look, is this what you want? Why do you want this? And Daniel's is like, because it was part of the deal, it's mine, you've got to give it to me. Well, Zodiac shows up, the real Zodiac, with a demon-killing gun. He shoots Suicide off the building and then hits Ghost Rider with it and says that his demon masters gave him the gun. But the gun didn't work. Ghost Rider blows up the gun, hits Zodiac with his chain, and he chases Zodiac into the subway, and Suicide follows. And that is where this issue ends. Ghost Rider number 19. Brian, what'd you think?
This one's interesting because we've generally been pretty favorable to the 1990s series, probably more than maybe some fans agree, because there might be some people who didn't like, especially some of the more recent of the issues. And this one's tough for me because I'm so conditioned to automatically enjoy what Howard Mackey's been putting out for the early series. Same thing with Tex as well. It's just like, you know, they're batting 1,000. They've just been really killing it overall. Even with a couple of missteps, haven't been that major where that you point to like 2 years of storytelling. That's just really solid in my opinion. But this is interesting. This is like the wheels are coming off the wagon a little bit, because I sort of see issue 19 as two halves of a comic. You know, there's one half that's really excellent and the other half that's awful. And let me kind of explain a little bit. So I love the fact whenever you see Ghost Rider, the visuals, first of all, Tex is still killing it. He's doing great on the Ghost Rider visuals. Seeing the criminal, you know, hung upside down at the Brooklyn Bridge was just a great image. And, you know, having him kind of think about his mission of vengeance versus the mission of protection, where it's like, and he does address this later in the series as well, where he's wondering how it is that he's kind of relegated to avenging people who've already been hurt or killed rather than protecting people before they are hurt. And that's kind of an interesting dynamic, because he's a spirit of vengeance, but he can't always save people. And it's almost kind of like, I believe one of his enemies, you know, Scarecrow or one of the other guys called his mission Toothless, where it was like, you know what, like it's worthless. Like, look at what you do. Mm-hmm. It's like you can't protect anybody. You're only cleaning up the mess. And that's kind of an interesting concept that I didn't really think about for a lot of it, where that's, I just always see him fighting the bad guys, but a lot of times someone's already dead or bleeding out or whatever. So I mean, it's definitely an interesting moment. That's what I liked about this one. I do miss, in the current incarnation of the ongoing, the Noble Kale personality. What we're calling the Noble Kale, which is how Ghost Rider spoke in the 90s. There are many fans who think it's ridiculous. I'm not one of them. I like the personality. It's so different from Danny that when you have such a different personality, same thing with Zarathos and Blaze in the 70s, is that when you have this different personality sharing the same body, it's that ups the ante. I mean, think of Venom and Eddie Brock. They're different, and that's what makes them special. You know, when he turns into Venom, he's not 100% Eddie Brock. It's the same thing for many years with the Ghost Rider. A lot of newer fans were like, huh? Like, why are you talking like that in the 90s? That's so weird. Because they're used to, when they transform, they're much more like Michael Badalino, where they have, it's them up to 11. You know, it's just their personality, but with a flaming skull. And that's fine and well, but man, do I miss the speech pattern. And I know that's so crazy to say, because some people are like, all right, enough already. But, you know, the way he talks, I just love that. I mean, before I go on, what do you think about that?
Well, I think I am a fan of the idea that the Ghost Rider is a separate being from their host. And when you muddy the waters where it's Johnny in control of the Ghost Rider, Danny in control of the Ghost Rider, you lose part of what makes the Ghost Rider concept so unique, where it's the main character possessed by a being that's not themselves. It's not just them with power. And
it's like having, Hulk and Banner.
Yeah, yeah. And having that dynamic between Johnny Blaze and Zarathos or Danny Ketch and Noble Kale, it makes things just more interesting. And it gives more perspectives. It's not just, you know, Danny all the time or Johnny all the time. It's two main characters in one. And I think it really helps the 90s series. It helps the 80s series. And whenever that dynamic came back in modern stories, the series immediately got more interesting. Like, there were bits during Daniel Way's and Jason Aaron's run where Johnny wasn't in control and the spirit of vengeance took over. And I love that dynamic. I love that that play between those two. And you would also often have conversations, like in caption boxes, between the host and the spirit, where they would argue back and forth. And I think that's missing in modern stuff. And I'm hoping to see a little bit more of that come back too.
Definitely. And it's like, and you're right too. And because there are cool moments later, even later in the series, a couple issues down the line, where I believe Danny Ketch gets his throat ripped out. And then, but the Ghost Rider is still alive, you know, and there's the dynamic of trying to keep Danny alive by, but the more he's separated, the weaker he gets. And they even flash forward to like issue 50, 51, a couple years later down the line, about 20, 25 issues down the line, there's a moment where Ghost Rider does not want to turn back into Danny after Danny's resurrected.
Yeah.
You know, and where he goes, why should I damn him to half a life? He keeps saying, he's like, why should I do that? He says, I should. Now, at the time, he wasn't thinking about, he would probably gradually be getting weaker, but he was like, I'd rather just leave Danny dead.
Yeah.
Then bring him back and have his life suffer, have everyone in his family suffer. And that's an interesting dynamic. You have these two distinct personalities that are at conflict with each other. And I mean, think all the amazing visuals in the 70s and 80s where you have all the covers where the Ghost Rider's facing off against Blaze.
Yeah.
They're wrestling for control. That's where it's always great. And with that being said, there could be something coming up down the pipeline with the current ongoing. You know, Danny is not at full power. Like, at least the first couple issues, he's not as strong as we're used to seeing him. And, you know, there's some fan theories saying that what if he is going to eventually rejoin with more of traditional spirit of vengeance, kind of like Noble Kale, become much more connected, and maybe he'll be more of a badass at that point, and he'll have the conflict like he had in the 90s. I mean, Ed Brisson is such a fan of the 90s series that you can't ignore the fact that for 94 issues, you had another being involved, and it was this spirit of vengeance. You know, it wasn't just Danny to 11. I mean, it's working right now, but I miss that. And like I said, some fans don't like that because he's kind of a repetitive, like, vengeance. And he just talks a lot about the same kind of stuff over and over again. But I love the fact that it's just another being. Yeah. And it was mysterious for so many years, too. Yeah. We didn't know what his backstory was. But anyway. So this brings me to the part that I didn't like about this issue, which is everything about the villains. From Suicide to Zodiac, nothing works for me in this one. The premise of Suicide is troubling, especially with such a dark origin. I mean, imagine little kids in the 90s reading this bad boy. You know, it's like, it's pretty heavy-handed. And that's not to, you know, diminish people with suicidal feelings or whatever, because that's a very serious thing. But the way it's handled is like the first few pages, there's pathos for this character. This character who becomes known as Suicide. But the deal with Mephisto or the demon or whatever, and then how his powers manifest is just so ridiculous, you know?
Yeah.
He grows in stature. He borrows a wardrobe from a lady across the hall that it was from her boyfriend during their club days when they'd go clubbing in New York. So it's like, you know, what, mesh shirt or whatever, you know, it's like, it is so bizarre. It's almost better, and it's funny that they tried to justify it by explaining why his clothes look like that. It's like, just some things are just better left unsaid, you know, just drop it, you know, just, he looks weird and it is what it is. Because then they have him on the back of the motorcycle. That's another part that's so absurd. She gives him a ride to Brooklyn.
He looks like the Hulk.
The Ghost Rider, and he looks like the Hulk. And he's, so for the listener who doesn't have the issue, Imagine a circus bear riding on a tricycle.
Yeah.
It's utterly ridiculous. Yeah. Honestly, I wish the origin wasn't so dark, because it would be really funny having him riding around on small vehicles all the time. Like a little RC car, or like a little Cozy Coupe 2 or something.
Yeah, like a Shriner.
We'll have to post a picture. It is so ridiculous. Which flies in the face of the dark, heavy origin of this character. This guy is distraught. He's lost his wife and kids to divorce, and he wants to end it all. But it's, you know, the deal is that he's gonna give him the ability to kill himself, but only by the hands of Ghost Rider. And like, it is all over the place. It is so stupid. A masochistic villain who just wants to die is not good writing. That's just my take on it. You know, it's lame. You know, he keeps on getting in the way and begging to be murdered. It's just like, it's just off-putting, I think, for a lot of the readers, especially if someone is going through some emotional issues of themselves, having these feelings. It kind of trivializes a little bit of it. And I don't think that was Mackie's intention, but it was a rare misfire in the early series. So, I mean, it didn't really work for me. And then you get Zodiac on top of it. Oh, my God. Zodiac has... there's a part where he has a demon-killing gun or whatever.
Yeah.
And he says... He calls it out specifically. He says, "This is a demon-killing gun. And you're a demon. Bye." And he says the word bye. He says the word bye. And he blasts him. And it's just like, oh, my God. It's just so lame. Does not work at all, but... that's that, you know.
Suicide is possibly the worst character to come out of the 90s series. I can't stand this guy. In my day job, I work in the mental health field. And years and years and years ago, I did suicide prevention hotline thing, like stuff like that. And this is so... With all respect to Howard Mackey, who I think normally does such a good job on this series, Suicide is possibly the most tone-deaf and even, I would say, offensive idea for a character. I mean, just naming a character Suicide is just like, oh, what were you thinking? The character, he's not just tone-deaf. He's not just ridiculous. He's not entertaining to read about. You know, he's constantly trying to throw himself in front of buses and off of buildings, and it's just I could almost see the idea of like, okay, we're gonna Ghost Rider refuses to kill people, so we're gonna put him against a villain who can only die by Ghost Rider's hand, and that's the only thing he wants is to die. And it just it just doesn't work. It doesn't work at all. I think Mackie actually pulls this off a little better a little later in the series when he brings in Death Ninja, who has almost the exact same premise, but done in a much more reasonable way and a much more interesting way.
And think about that, listeners. We're saying that a character named Death Ninja is better written than Suicide.
Yes.
Because Suicide is essentially Wile E. Coyote in this issue.
Yeah, he is. He's the Energizer Bunny. You know, it's... And then you've got Zodiac, who just doesn't work. Zodiac is... Zodiac was interesting in his first appearance. But ever since then, it just muddies things more. Like, okay, well, he's an assassin. No, he's a drug dealer. No, he's a demon. No, he has demons that are bosses. Oh, he sacrifices people with a big machine and a bunch of sorcerers, like during the Doctor Strange crossover. And it's just, there's no solid idea behind this guy other than he's green. You know, if it wasn't for the artwork, I wouldn't like this issue at all. This is by far the worst of the 90s series to this point. I don't like either villain. I like that Mephisto's finally being brought into this following Hearts of Darkness.
Yeah.
And I like Tex's his art style for Mephisto because it's so different than how we normally see him. And I think that just goes back to this is what Suicide's interpretation of the devil would be like. Much more traditional horns and fire and all that stuff. And for the most part, Tex does a really good job. There's a bit of confusion when... So the Zodiac that first appears to confront Ghost Rider is actually the drug dealer that Ghost Rider interrogated at the beginning of the issue. And his name's Tim. And there is some confusion that, like... Tim is dying... but not because of what Ghost Rider did. It's because of injuries that that Zodiac did. But before that, Zodiac was just fine. He was like shooting a gun and pretending to be Zodiac, smoking a cigar and everything. I don't know. I just thought it was a weird, unnecessary twist. Just this comic doesn't work. It's bad, and I hate saying that about a 90s Ghost Rider comic because I love that series so much, but this issue is bad.
I'm wondering if Mackie was trying to say something about Ghost Rider by introducing these specific villains, because the no killing and all that kind of stuff, that stinks because they don't feel like more real characters like we're used to with Mackie's writing. They're only there as a foil, just as a foil to the Ghost Rider. And they're not interesting in their own right. In fact, they're odd and off-putting. So that's where it fails. And like I said, that there's a couple moments here in the issue that are interesting to me, but it's not handled well. So this was a kind of a rare misfire.
Yeah, I would have to agree. Especially when you compare Zodiac and Suicide to like the earlier pairing of Blackout and Death Watch, who were immediately interesting and immediately engaging. And these two...
Definitely.
Mooks or not, they're cannon fodder for Ghost Rider to go through. It's disappointing. Like you said, a rare misfire.
Oof.
Yeah.
What a downer. Yeah. What a way to end.
I will say that it was better than Champions number 2. I will at least go that far.
That's high praise.
Yeah. Damning it with faint praise. All right. Well, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. As always, you can find us across the internet plains on Facebook at facebook.com/vengeanceunbound, on the vengeanceunbound.blogspot.com comic blog, and on Twitter at innerdemonsgr. And until our next episode, which will probably be in a couple weeks, everyone, thanks for listening. Ryan, it's been a pleasure as always.
Absolutely.
All right, everyone, take care.